Welcome to Lily of the Herbs Talks. Lily created this podcast to share herbal wisdom and plant magic. She seeks to catch the plant people nestled throughout Australia and talk to them about their secrets and knowledge of traditional plant remedies, foraging, medicine making, and plant connection.
Okay, and here I am with Jessie Fayers, Dr. Jessie Fayers, a dear friend of mine who we've just trying to work it out. Where did we meet, Jessie?
Well, we thought it might have been at our mutual friend's permaculture farm, but it was maybe before that at Signet Folk Festival. I think someone introduced us maybe on the dance floor or
yeah.
In our little paddock listening to a folk band.
Somewhere in Tasmania, yep. But anyway, I met Jessie and just as everyone that I interview on this podcast had an instant connection with her, and we would just meet up and harvest nettle and have wild chats. And she was a big mentor for me because she'd already been practicing for 10 years or so when I met her, and that was when I was sort of like delving, deciding that I wanted to become herbalist. And so she's been really supportive for me in my journey as a practitioner. So thanks for being here, Jessie.
It's such a pleasure, Lily, and it's so lovely to see like your progress as a practitioner in the last 10 years. And Lily and I have been doing a little bit of shared care with some clients, which has been a really nice experience to kind of be connecting professionally and working to support people from different directions.
Yeah.
Chinese medicine direction, herbal Zen type directions.
It's awesome. Yeah, if I have a client and I'm like, oh, they just need acupuncture, they need Jessie, I'll let them know. And then sometimes I've been coming in and watching done that before and watched the session and just kind of got her perspective and the points that she would use, and that's been beautiful to have that relationship. And I've even been telling other people that I do that with you and saying like that's how a mentorship starts, you form this relationship. And Jessie's run a Moxel Bastion workshop for me in person and online, so we have more coming, which we'll talk about. But anyway, today what I really want to talk about with Jessie, I guess, is a few things. We might hear a little bit about your just maybe how you started it all, and then I really want to talk with her about the female reproductive cycle and those phases. And from a Chinese medicine perspective, she's going to share about some herbs, supportive herbal formulas. We're also going to talk about endometriosis and what the blood can colors of the blood can tell us. So Jessie, tell us about where this started for you. How did you begin on the journey?
So unlike a lot of practitioners, I think a lot of practitioners get into their modality because of their own health concerns. I just got into Chinese medicine when I was really young. I was 16. I was in Chinatown and curious about these acupuncture places that were lining the streets. So I just went into one and the guy let me like look at someone he was doing acupuncture on. And then I booked an appointment and started to get acupuncture for myself for some headaches I was experiencing. And it was a no-brainer for me to be able to like combine the necessity of going to university, family pressure of going to university, with the deep wanting to be a witch and to be working with herbal medicine and to be also a little bit rebellious in kind of like, at the time it felt like I was subverting, the mainstream by doing something alternative. So it really fed all of those things in my like adolescence. And then as I've progressed as a practitioner, the medicine just keeps on like getting deeper, and I'm really grateful that I got on that path so young. Yeah, and studied straight out of high school, really.
That's great. Yeah, because you have a depth of wisdom. You've got many years of experience and you're still young, which is so cool.
Youngish.
But whenever you jump on the path is also fine. I say that people, it's not really about age, but whenever you
absolutely
jump on, it's fine. So great. Okay. And I like that you wanted to be a witch. I think that's what we connect on. We grew a flower garden together last year at Jessie's place.
And Lily just bought me a bottle of strong ethanol to decoct some passion flowers in that are on my vine outside.
Yeah. You've got to have, I think it's really important. That's what I get from Jessie. It's really important to have other practitioner friends, because otherwise because you are practicing on your own a lot of the time in a room. And if you don't have someone to talk about and ask questions of, it can become lonely and you don't progress as well.
And I find like having a conversation with you around making medicine and how you use it in clinic takes me a little bit outside of that very kind of like structured clinical approach that we do have. Like we have, you know, very kind of like scientific and what am I trying to say? You know, like not as grassroots, not as like getting your hands in the soil and growing your plants. So I really love being able to like cultivate that connection with the earth while still being, you know, working in clinic almost full time.
Yeah,
it's in the four walls.
It's amazing what you do. It's so incredible. So let's get into this female reproductive cycle. Gosh, it's a big, huge, well, you know, we don't have it. This will be probably part one because we've got so much to get into. But I guess where would I like to start with you? Do you want to talk about the four phases?
Yeah, absolutely. So the four phases of the menstrual cycle is, oh, it's a Western medicine concept, you know, because in Chinese medicine, I suppose it wasn't this defined, like, you know, 2,500 years ago, we had different ways of explaining the cycles. But just very simply, like we start with our menstruation, which is obviously when we're bleeding. And this is like a very deep winter time for a woman. To be able to tap into like a more yin aspect of her nature. So like a deeper, quieter, more reflective, slow time. And this is a time when as a practitioner, like we like women to pay attention to what their menstrual blood is like so that they can reflect back to us. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. Maybe the next thing we'll talk about is the menstrual blood. But following menstruation and that deep yin time, we then start to rebuild our blood and our yin as our follicles are starting to develop. So the FSH and the LH are released to help the follicle development and the estrogen starting to build. This is a time when women have more energy. They can like probably draw on their resources a little bit more in this time to do more like kind of hardcore exercise. They'll find themselves more extroverted and creative. And just have like a bunch more dynamism as they lead up to from that inner springtime to the height of the menstrual cycle in its yang phase as we release an egg. And it takes a lot of energy to release an egg. So we see this as like the apex of like when the yin transforms to the yang, which is a basic concept in Chinese medicine that underpins pretty much this whole medical model that we work with. And the egg's released, therefore opening up the cycle into the luteal phase, like the autumn of the cycle, where the progesterone is then being released from the corpus luteum. And this is a time when, I don't know about this time, how to describe it, because it's not like you have to stop your activities or really like wrap yourself in cotton wool, but it is a time to conserve energy, especially if you're preparing for pregnancy, because we can spend too much energy that can then deflate that buildup of the yang, and then you might have some problems in this phase, like maintaining your progesterone levels. We might see that reflected on a BBT chart as like the temperature's dropping or not having enough yang. So it's an important time to make sure that you're really nourishing yourself, and a good time also to make sure that you're moving any stagnant energetic things in your life, as in moving your body to literally move the chi through your pelvis and get the blood flow going through the uterus, but also just like journaling and moving anything that might be stagnating in your psyche, because that can then lead to PMS signs and symptoms that we say are a manifestation of liver chi stagnation. And we see that so often at this time of the cycle. We see liver chi stagnation, bloating, sore breasts, headaches. So just make sure you're moving the chi, the blood, and the emotional stagnation around that time.
Beautiful. Thanks for bringing those two frameworks together, the Western and the Chinese medicine perspective. I love how you call it, yeah, the liver chi stagnancy. I see that so often in myself occasionally as well.
I was about
well.
To say myself.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And no, yeah, Jessie, I forgot to mention at the start, but yeah, Jessie's a lot of your work has been with women supporting them that they're on their fertility journey, hasn't it? So you really have, you're fine-tuned at kind of emphasizing the importance of those different phases. And I do think like sometimes there, you know, there can be like, do you feel like a lower energy in the second half anyway, or it shouldn't be? Do you think it should be kind of sustained, or you should tend to rest?
I think women can connect in and see what they feel like, but what the feedback is from a lot of people and what I feel in myself is that the follicular phase is definitely one of like feeling more energetic, feeling more social, and more outwards. And the luteal phase is one of feeling like there is a need to slow down. Like the body has just gone through like a big process of developing the uterine lining and getting that egg ready to be released. And so there can be a natural like, you know, pop and then a little bit of a like a come down from all of that energy.
Yeah.
What do you feel?
No, I think that that definitely rings true in what I see and what I've experienced myself. I think there's definitely a tendency to have a short temper, a bit of a short fuse for myself in that time. I think like, and I've been doing a bit of research into blood sugar, the relation with sugar in that time. And I think if I do go too long in that time, just pushing myself, kind of like burning yang, burning energy, not eating, kind of, then it will, the fuse will kind of snap at that time. Whereas maybe in the first half of the cycle, I could go 4, 5, 6 hours just seeing clients, doing things, running workshops, whereas in the second phase I'll need to just stop and like eat something grounding to keep going.
And like protein is really important for building hormones. So I don't know if that's what you feel like eating, but I think a lot of the time when I'm seeing people in clinic and maybe we're just looking at their signs and symptoms and feeling pulse and doing a general Chinese medicine workup, or we might be using like some blood test or some urine test to look at their hormone levels. But if you feel like there's a deficiency in their hormones or a deficiency in their blood, it's so much about like eating, building the blood and looking after your digestion too, so that you can absorb all those nutrients.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay. Yeah, so that's a nice well-rounded picture for everyone. You mentioned, yeah, we talked a little bit about that, yeah, there's the quality of the blood, and that's something that I think Chinese medicine does so well. I've heard a saying before, like, you can tell everything about a woman by just looking at what the quality of her blood is each menstrual cycle. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I feel like the bleed and also like the symptoms during the menstrual cycle are a barometer of what that woman has been going through that month. Like, you know, how's the diet? How's the self-care? Stressful events, because the blood will reflect the quality of and the of the chi and blood of that person. So it's another vital sign. I've heard some people refer it to. So it will reflect exactly what's been going on that month, but it will also give us indications if there's some kind of like deeper pattern of disharmony that can then come out through some blood clots or a darker colored blood. So I'll go through all the different colored bloods. And one tool that I bring into clinic sometimes is going down to the hardware shop and getting the Durex color charts, so that me and the ladies I'm talking to, the people I'm talking to, can be on the same page about what the colors
are. You get it from the Durex paint.
Paint samples.
I love that. Paint sample. Cool.
Paint samples.
We might have to just design you one that was specifically. Oh no, but they have all the colors.
They have all the shades.
Great. Okay,
but
cool.
But then you could cut them out and make your own little table.
Yeah, cool. I love that. Anyway, yes.
Maybe we'll do an Insta post about it. So the different colours of menstrual blood, we'll start with the pale, watery menstrual blood, which is an interesting one. So often women will come in saying there is some kind of like watery quality to their blood, and that it's pale. It could be a pale pink or like a very not bright red. And that's indicating that there might not be enough spleen qi in the body. So a deficiency of one of the really important aspects of developing qi in the body that's got to do with digestion, and it's got to do with producing red blood cells. So it means there's a deficiency in the red blood cells that are coming through into the menstrual blood. And someone might be experiencing symptoms of like bloating or fatigue, maybe having trouble digesting as well. So they'll also have a bunch of other symptoms if they've got light colored menstrual blood. And then the step up from there to get a little bit darker is the crimson red, which is normal. It always reminds me of like, I don't know if you've seen that show Clueless, and they talk about their period, and the guy's like in the 90s, he's like, she's riding her crimson wave.
Yeah, okay, the crimson
so that
wave.
That makes me think crimson. Crimson is the color that we're looking for that is more normal. So it means that there's enough qi and blood, there's enough building of the blood, but it's not at all deficient like that pale watery blood. And it's not bright red, because bright red's indicating there's more heat in the system. There could be inflammation in the system. And it could go along with some signs of like an infection as well. So just keeping an eye out for like any unusual smells or a fever as well if you've got bright red blood, maybe get checked out if you have any of those symptoms. And then we move into a darker red blood, which is what you might experience if you have liver cheese stagnation. So the cheese getting stuck, and therefore the blood is not getting as much oxygen as well, because blood is following where the chi goes. So if your chi gets stuck, then you're getting a more physical manifestation of stagnation as well. So we see this if someone's cycle has maybe been impacted by stress, if there's been sluggishness, and it will manifest as those PMS symptoms. And we want to really spread the chi and warm the uterus to allow that good blood circulation. And then from there, it could be that the blood might come out as purple or black, might have clots in it. And this is sometimes also going along with pain and stabbing, heavy flow. And it could be that the person has like a deeper level of blood stagnation, either from having cold in the uterus, which is a concept in Chinese medicine, which I'll talk a bit about in a moment. And they might have endometriosis or some fibroids as well. So when someone comes into clinic and they've got those symptoms, we're really happy that they've arrived so we can help them with some acupuncture and help them with herbs as well, especially if they are coming in maybe thinking they've got endometriosis, or maybe even with the diagnosis of endometriosis and having that pain and having that flare up and the clots before their period. So sometimes they've had a laparoscopy and sometimes not to know the diagnosis.
So if, thanks for sharing that. So we've got a few different kinds of blood maybe we go through. So there's like the watery blood, and that can often go hand in hand with some sort of like a spleen deficiency. They're not transforming their food nutrients well.
It reminds me of gardening. Like if you're, I don't know, if I go into my garden and the leaves of my plants are really pale, I automatically think, oh, I haven't fed the soil enough. So that's like having pale blood.
Pale blood, okay. So they're needing help with digestion, perhaps working with that. And then step up from that is the crimson blood, which is what you're wanting to see. Mm. And then I'm just wondering about viscosity. Like sometimes, you know, there can be blood flow that's like, well, I guess you've got that watery. Is the crimson blood that you're looking for kind of normalish blood? Is that thicker, or is it, how thick is it? What viscosity is it? It's definitely not like honey, but it's not just water. Is it a tiny bit thicker than water?
Yes, thicker than water, like blood. Like blood is thicker than water.
Yes.
And it's definitely not like honey, because that's an indication there might be some mucus or some heat in the body as well. So yeah, good question, because I suppose these days it's sometimes hard to tell what the quality of the blood is like with period undies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's good to keep an eye out on, just to make sure it's not too watery and not too viscous.
Not too viscous.
And because it's the shedding of your uterine lining, it's not just going to be like blood that comes out of your arm if you cut yourself. It is going to have a couple of little kind of flecks in it, which are normal as you discharge the lining of your uterus. But we're just keeping an eye out for like larger clots. And just to be clear about how large clots can be, I often get people to say if they're the size of a 5-cent piece, 10-cent piece, or a lime or something like that, because people will say, oh no, I only have small clots. And then I'll get them to show me with their fingers, and the clots are often like the size of a lemon. So yeah, a little bit bigger than small.
And if there, someone is experiencing clots that are the size of a little lemon or a lime, like what would you recommend for them? Would you be recommending to get testing, or?
Not necessarily. So I think it really depends on the individual and what else is going on in their lives as far as their period and any symptoms they're experiencing. Because clots on their own is something that we want to take as a symptom that we're going to help to resolve the body's stagnation. But they might not be experiencing heaps of pain or other disruption to their life. So they might not really need to go down the route of laparoscopy. And Chinese medicine might be enough to help resolve that.
Mm.
One thing that we would be looking at for large clots like that is whether or not the woman or the person is experiencing cold symptoms in the pelvis. Because we look at cold as something that can really cause a lot of stagnation. Stagnation doesn't just occur in a bubble. So I think I like to use the metaphor of like coconut oil in this occasion. So if you warm up coconut oil, it's going to be runny and really like easy to flow around. But if you put it in the fridge and you get cold into the coconut oil, it's going to be stagnant and have lumps in it. And the same is with the menstrual blood. So when we get clots in the period and these stagnation symptoms, we want to make sure the uterus is warm and the blood is able to circulate really easily. So the treatment for this is that we apply moxibustion through our acupuncture treatment. So an application of the mugwort herb, either burning as a cigar that you hold close to the abdomen or in a direct application burning onto the tummy. And we use herbs that are warming to create blood circulation in the uterus. There's a lot of Chinese herbal formulas that we use in this instance. And it's always individualized for the woman as well. So it's not like there's just one herb that I can say, throw into your repertoire for this. I think if you're experiencing this, it's really good to see an actual practitioner and get an individualized formula.
So we covered those four types, and then we ended talking about the stagnation if you're experiencing clots, and that is related to, in from a Chinese medicine perspective, clotting in or stagnation in the uterus. And I'm wondering, so, and then you were saying sometimes when people are experiencing heavier bleeds with clotting, they might have had a diagnosis of endometriosis, so they might not. What is the Chinese medicine perspective of endometriosis?
So the thing is, in Chinese medicine, is that there might be like five people presenting with, say, endometriosis, and they might all have different diagnoses. So we can't say that they're all experiencing cold in the uterus unless we look at their signs and symptoms. But very commonly, we do see it as being either qi and or blood stagnation or cold in the uterus, or a combination of those. And so they're going to present with potentially clots and painful periods, disrupted digestion. There's so many symptoms that go along with endometriosis. And sometimes it's a really tricky thing to get a diagnosis about, because it doesn't always feel like it's something related to the menstrual system. Sometimes people might just have painful bowel movements if the endo is actually at the back of the uterus and not on the ovaries and the uterus.
Okay, and how do you work with endometriosis? Is it acupuncture and herbs that you're generally working to just kind of, so it's not sort of like, I think that Western medicine perspective is like, you've got endometriosis, either like we're going to remove the, remove the endometriosis if it's growing outside the womb or whichever. And then if it's, from Chinese medicine, I guess you're just trying to support the whole body, support the digestion.
Make sure that
things are moving, energy's moving clearly.
Yeah. And I think it's important to also just say that, like, in these circumstances, we're often doing a bit of a shared care with people's Western gynecologist or their fertility specialist, so that they can manage it from that perspective as well and undergo some investigations or some treatment. But what we're doing is using acupuncture and Chinese herbs, and also supporting with supplements and heaps of diet and lifestyle advice. So with acupuncture, it's actually been shown lately that we can affect the pain receptors in the lower abdomen by doing acupuncture. And there's a study recently that shows that the estradiol levels will be affected in a positive way and reduce from acupuncture as well. And so often if I'm seeing people for endo, they might come in weekly or maybe fortnightly to help manage their symptoms. Or if they know how it goes in their body and they know that they flare up once a month, they sometimes just come in once a month for acupuncture. And then between treatments, either treat themselves with moxibustion, but most of the time definitely take home herbs with them, so a formula that's tailored to them. And then I like to support their stress by giving them magnesium, talking to them about like different ways to manage their stress, and making sure they're equipped in those ways as well.
Okay, beautiful. And do you feel like, is there any supportive practices from a Chinese medicine perspective that you would be recommending, especially if someone, like if someone's, pretty much got a painless regular cycle and then they're like, oh, what, my cycle? Yeah, it's fine. And they, then maybe they're, whatever you're doing is probably fine. But if you are someone who is experiencing heavier bleeds, painful bleeds, PMS symptoms, what are some supportive practices you'd be recommending, especially in that premenstrual phase and around bleeding, maybe like not swimming in cold water?
Exactly. Well, swimming in cold water, I think, is like, it's got its place because it can be really lovely, but I would say definitely don't sit around in cold swimmers. So if you are going to plunge into the river, then change your clothes afterwards and then try and avoid the swims in the cold water when you're menstruating, because your vessels are more open in the uterus, so there's more susceptibility to the invasion of cold from outside as well. I love moxibustion as a self-care practice, and I often get my patients to buy a moxibox, so something that's very easy to treat themselves at home with, or to get a TENS machine to help to manage their pain as well. And then I'll also usually prescribe some like bioactive curcumin tablets to help for pain relief if people are trying to avoid painkillers as well, just to give their liver a rest. And preparing for your cycle, like allowing people in your household to know that you get painful periods, maybe letting your work know as well, and then prepping food for yourself to make that period easier is a really nice way to, yeah, bring your self-care right into your house.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It, you know, it is such a thing. And sometimes I remember reading, when was it? It was Christine Northrup, that woman who wrote Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. And I remember her talking about endometriosis. It's like, you know, it's the uterine lining growing outside the uterus, and like it can even grow in the brain.
Wow.
It can grow anywhere within internally within the body. And she's sort of like, it's kind of like, you know, that's the inside of the uterus, the lining of the uterus, the female. So female tissue, basically, it's female tissue growing in other areas of the body. And it's almost just like, I think we don't, you know, so often we still, there's a lot of talk about the menstrual cycle and support, but still how many people tell their boss and how many people really rest and are able to take that time when they are feeling in pain. And so, you know, sometimes I think when I think of that, I'm like, it's just kind of like in protest growing and being like, I'm here.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of signs that as women, we're really lucky to, you know, to be able to tap into, to listen to, that our body is speaking to us. And if we're experiencing pain or we're experiencing anything that's like, you know, kinks or bumps in our menstrual cycle, then we're really lucky to be able to then address them. But if we don't, then, you know, disease can really manifest. Yeah. And we're pretty disconnected from nature as a society as well. I think if we slept under the moon and spent a lot of time like having downtime and being able to inhabit our bodies, then we'd be able to listen to these signs maybe before they get quite bad.
Yes, definitely. And yeah, we're the only, like, we, our womb is our like direct connection to the moon and the tides and the waters of the world. Like, we are actually pulled by the moon like the tides are. The tides are influenced by the moon, and we don't think about that, and we are too. But how often do we connect with the moon and know where the moon is?
I did hear that it was like one of the first remedies to go to. Like, maybe this was in China, so I've just heard it through the grapevine, but there would be a prescription to go and sleep under the moon for a whole lunar cycle if there was any disruption to the period.
Wow.
So before herbs or acupuncture or, I know, bioactive curcumin. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't do that, if especially if it's cold, you just don't want to sleep out, you can't, you live in an apartment building or something, I guess even just making an effort to go out and bathe in the moonlight for like 5 minutes in the night just before sleep would be a beautiful practice to do. And
the practice of herbal medicine too, and harvesting herbal medicine on the lunar cycles. Like, what a way to connect with the earth and therefore expose yourself more to the cyclical nature of the moon.
Yes. Well, and which herbs?
And the seasons.
Jessie, I know. Which herbs? It's very tailored.
Which herbs?
Which herbs?
So yeah, like, it's individualized in Chinese medicine. We don't often just say take this one herb, but historically and kind of culturally in China, people make teas from Chinese herbs and they cook with Chinese herbs in soups. So this is a really nice way for people who are listening, or anyone who just wants to kind of like have an additive effect to their health to access Chinese medicine. But if there's some really specific things going on, it's good to see a practitioner for your mixed individualized formula. So I actually made a list of a couple of herbs, which probably no, Lily. The first one that's easy to use as a tea, it tastes pretty good as well, which is a bonus for a Chinese herb, is American ginseng. Easy to put into a soup, and it's nice to build qi and blood if you're feeling tired, or if we're talking about that luteal phase defect, like having low yang or low progesterone, this can really gently lift the yang. So you could use it like post-ovulation if you are trying to lift up that yang. If you have spotting with your period, that can be a sign that you're a bit progesterone deficient. So you could use this herb, and it's adaptogenic as well. And it's a bit more gentle than the other ginsengs. Do you use white peony?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, yeah, cool. So we use this a lot. Yeah. This is probably one of like the three main herbs for fertility and gynecological things, and it doesn't taste as good. So Not so inclined to recommend it in teas, but really good to hide the flavour in broths and soups. And when you're working with these herbs, it's very safe. You just pick a few pieces out of the packet and chuck them into your stews and your herbs. And this is going to regulate blood and build blood, nourish yin and yang. And it's really good for that kind of like bumpy liver stagnation in the luteal phase as well. So for headaches and PMS and cramping. And I like to combine it with angelica, Chinese angelica or dongguei for cramping as well. And it's also another blood tonic. So there's some beautiful herbs. Goji berries are great in a tea. When I'm menstruating, I love to get a Chinese red date or two and a couple of goji berries and have that on the go all day. And just pour water over it as you go, hot water, and drinking it. The Chinese red date's really good for digestion as well, and it builds blood. We also love black sesame seed as another really nourishing food to have. Not so much as a tea, but you can make crackers or you can cook with it as well. Probably better to cook with it because we like cooked foods in TCM. And it's really good for dry skin if you've got dry bowels and stops your hair from going grey, but it's a yin tonic as well.
Great. What about just like black tahini?
Yeah.
Just having a spoonful of that.
Yeah, get into it. A little bit hot for the liver, but
just
also
straight.
A nice tonic. Yeah, and just like with everything, like just seeing how it makes you feel. So not having too many nuts and seeds because they can cause stagnation.
Yeah, I guess they're a lot harder to digest, you know, when they to break down a nut, like especially like a, you know, one of those big Brazil nuts. If you're just eating that all the time, if you eat a lot of nut butters, you know, especially I know a lot of vegans, you know, they do rely on nuts and seeds. But yeah, they can be harder to break down.
Yeah, and they can cause a lot of stagnation. Like we say that things that are oily are harder to break down. Mm. They're creating a little bit of a barrier for the liver and the gallbladder. So just creating extra work. And there's a little bit of a segue into something that's really important when it comes to Chinese medicine and like a very foundational concept, which is to not add extra strain onto your body by having raw and cold foods. So 100% during your menstruation, but pretty much like all through your cycle, try and avoid having things that are like icy drinks, cold smoothies, and warm up your food. Because if you don't, then your gut and your hydrochloric acid, your stomach fire has to do all that work for you. And it can create a lot of tiredness and lead to malabsorption. So you can't absorb your fats, you can't build your hormones. So it's going to lead to all those deficiencies and contributes to the cold in the womb. So especially if you've got painful periods, try and look a little bit into your diet and avoid the cold things. You know, like sprinkle some herbs or some rocket onto your foods, but not like raw carrots and cold smoothies.
Yeah, the smoothies are a big one that I see.
You see that a lot?
Yeah.
Me too.
I mean, I'm a big fan of a bliss ball, to be honest. You saw me eat one when I got here. I think in the afternoon I'll often, or if I'm on the go with a bit of a break, I'll have a bliss ball.
Yeah.
That's where I get my nuts and dried fruits and things. But I think, too much of that, like relying on that as a food, those harder to digest, colder foods is going to slow you down in the end.
Absolutely. And I do like in summer an adapted like Chinese medicine friendly smoothie where I blanch my greens beforehand. So then putting cooked greens into the smoothie and put like collagen powder and a few blueberries. If the blueberries are frozen, I wait till it gets room temp to drink it. It's kind of like an adapted soup in a way.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks for that, Jessie. I think there's some good herbs for people to get in. And I love the Chinese date. Chinese date is jujube. So fun. It just tastes, I love it.
I love eating it at the end of the day after I've been pouring the hot water on it all day.
Yes, and it's all moist and all soaked it all up.
Yeah,
so...
and I keep on seeing that as such a foundation in postpartum support and postpartum recipes too, because it's so good for replenishing the blood.
Yeah, that jujube. Yeah, and you can buy it even just like at Asian groceries, they often have.
Yeah.
I mean, it may not be organic, but...
Totally.
That's still... Okay.
And you can access the herbs I mentioned through the Chinese grocery shop.
Yeah, yes. Okay, great. So that sort of food as medicine. I like seeing it as that. Well, we've got... let's keep going for a little bit, a few more minutes. Is there anything else that you'd like to just go into that you feel like you'd like to share with listeners about the reproductive cycle?
I think this is a bit of a follow-on from the whole endometriosis thing, because when we had a chat about doing this podcast, you were like, why do we have so many disruptions in our hormones these days, and what's going on with, like, you know, our culture, our lifestyles that's maybe contributing to this? And you know, there's a huge amount of toxins and endocrine disruptors that we're exposed to. And I just wanted to touch on that a little bit because in the classics of Chinese medicine, in the Nei Jing, they talk about 7-year cycles for females. And they talk about the first menstruation, the menarche, happening at 14. And then all of these developments of the cycles from then reaching your peak fertile years and then going more into your wisdom years and stopping menstruation at 49.
Okay.
So one of those cycles of 7.
Wow. Just, yes, at 49, you will stop menstruating.
Yeah. Bang on your birthday.
Yeah.
But, you know, more or less around those times. Mm. And so that's a reflection of what was happening 2,500 years ago and the window of fertility being between those years. And now we're seeing the average age of menarche being a lot earlier, so being 11, I think, now, and women, girls getting their period at 9, and people not stopping menstruation until they're in their 50s.
Yep.
So the window of menstruational, the use of being able to conceive are a lot longer, which sounds like it might be a good thing, but I think it's an indication that we're exposed to things disrupting our hormones.
Mm.
Yeah, so I wanted to just touch on that because it's so useful to know a bit about how you can empower yourself by looking at things around your house and just changing a few things slowly. It can be overwhelming when we start to look at environmental toxicities because they're everywhere, and we can only really control what we're exposed to on like a really regular basis. So that one of the big groups of things we're exposed to is BPAs. So plastics that are heated up as well. So switching out, like most people, I think in our community wouldn't be drinking from a plastic water bottle anymore, but I'm surprised how many people are. Mm-hmm. And people coming to clinic and for a consult and they've got a plastic water bottle. So just starting there, changing out your water bottle. And with BPAs as well, just making sure that you're not like heating up plastic takeaway containers, using glass, just things that you can slowly do and save up for as well. And then there's other things that you can get exposed to that are in like perfumes, hairsprays, Teflon, and the non-stick pans. All of these are endocrine disruptors. So think about phasing them out, and that can really support any endometriosis or people struggling with their fertility as well.
Mm-hmm. So phasing them out, and is there anything else to support that you'd recommend supporting people if they want to? I like detox is such a big word in these days. I mean, just being aware, I think, is a really good thing. But yeah, do you recommend detoxes for people?
I don't really recommend detoxes. Like in Chinese medicine, we're more about working with the seasons. So very naturally coming out of winter, the body will be ready to detox more because you're going to the spring energy. So it's a beautiful time to support yourself by having more greens and things to support the liver, leafy foods, making sure you're hydrating and moving out of those like more fatty, stewy, stagnant foods that we might be having in winter to deeply nourish ourselves. So the more we're in touch with the seasons and moving with the seasons, the less I feel like we need to do really radical detoxes.
Yeah. They can be so stressful on the body as well, going into those processes.
Yeah,
stressing the body. Yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Jessie. I feel like there's still many more questions, and eventually I would like to get you on for maybe the second part to this episode to talk a bit about testing and, you know, because I know you've been doing a course in different kind of urine sample testing, which we don't have time to go into today, but I think would be really interesting. I'm not a huge fan of testing and just kind of like working with what is, but I do think that it's good to inform people about what's the most the best way of really testing, because sometimes just going for a blood sample from your doctor isn't really giving you an accurate representation of where your progesterone, your estrogen levels are actually at. So the way that you're learning to do it, I'm really curious to hear, but that's for another time, so stay tuned, everyone. But yeah, thank you so much for chatting with us today, and I hope if anyone has any questions, I'll put your website up.
Feel free to reach out, and
and Jessie practices from Kangaroo Ground and Ivanhoe, Victoria, and we have a moxibustion workshop coming up next on the 2nd of March in 2024 in Kangaroo Ground at the beautiful Mud Brick studio that she and I have been practicing from. It's just such a very, very special place. So I'll put the link for that in the notes for today. And I guess I'll put Jessie's website. And then there was something else I wanted to say about that. Oh, yeah. And Jessie's teaching on my 4-month training again next year, doing Moxa. So I actually send people a kit And Jessie does a class with us online. So even if you're in another state listening, you can still experience Jessie's wisdom. Do you do online consultations?
Yeah, I do. So you can go through my website for online bookings for consultations, because there's so much we can do through like a herbal script and diet and diet and lifestyle advice.
Yeah, and I definitely recommend working with Jessie. She is a witch. So
cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Lily. It was so lovely to have a chat with you today. And look forward to our next little chat together.
Yay.